So as we begin this morning, it's my honor to introduce the Student Association President for the first time for this new academic year, fourth-year student just back from Vicarage, Jeremy Schultz.
Thank you very much. I'd like to get something straight here right in the beginning, because there seems to be a little bit of confusion. The last couple of days, I've heard a couple of comments from some of the students coming up to me and saying, for instance, "Mr. President, what's going on with these speed bumps here all around campus?" And then I heard this morning, "Mr. President, are we going to have donuts at this morning's President's Forum?" Well, just to let you all know that as your Student Association President, I am happy to take credit for the donuts, if you are pleased with those. As far as the speed bumps go or anything else you may not like, hey, what can I say, guys? I'm just one of you. Thank you very much for the applause. It's really unnecessary. I'd like to just let you know a little bit about myself this morning. Several of you probably know me already. The rest of you, I look forward to getting to know. I am a fourth-year student straight back from Largo, Florida, where I did Vicarage. It was a wonderful experience. My wife, Michelle, and I just had a tremendous time, and we are excited to be back, as was mentioned in the sermon this morning, excited to be here and preparing for my last year and my future call into the ministry. The tasks of the Student Association, as far as they go, let me first set up who we are. Basically, we are an extension of you. We are students, just like you. We are students that have been elected to serve, however. And we do this in a number of ways. And I'd like at this point to introduce my officers. And as I do that, one by one, I'd like you to stand as I say just a few words about you and your office, okay? So first off, my Vice President, Mr. Dave Coomer, second year man over there. Dave, you may know some of you who have moved in, especially over the summer, coming back from Vicarage or coming new to the campus. He was in charge of the Kingdom Movers. Another program of his is the Big Brother program, which will get started here real soon. So thank you, Dave. The secretary for this year that's been elected is Mr. Ben Squires. He's right back there. Ben is a returning second-year man, pre-Vicarage still. So what can I say? Ben knows this place better than I do. He's been in office now his second year, so he's quickly becoming my eyes and ears. The controller is Mr. Phil Talley. He's a fourth-year man, straight back from Vicarage. Phil's in charge of the money. He does the budgeting and the finance, helps out with that, and oversees it for all of our student programs that we run. I'd like to mention just a couple of things in relation to Phil's office at this time. If you are a first-year student and you would like to serve on the Student Senate or run for elections, then we need you. And we want you to sign up, and we want you to get those forms into Phil by this Friday. We need two married and two single students out of the first year class. Elections will take place in a couple of weeks, and Phil will have an announcement, he told me, in the daily announcements on Monday. So if you would like to serve in that capacity, you would get to help out, make budgetary decisions where our money gets placed, the Student Association money, towards Oktoberfest, towards Springfest. And it's just a really good opportunity to represent the class as well. Spiritual Life Representative, Mr. Ken Lieber, could you stand, please? Ken's a fourth-year guy and a real character, as most of you know. He's been working really hard on Opus Dei dorm devotions and married devotions, the small group Bible studies that many of you possibly signed up for. He'll have forthcoming announcements about all of that as it gets arranged and worked all together. I should also at this time plug this Sunday night's first prayer and praise gathering out in the woods, and that'll be at 6 o'clock. 6 o'clock Sunday in the woods, so I'd encourage you all to come out for that. The social cultural representative is Brad Aldridge, and where are you, Brad? There he is. Brad's a second-year man. Many of you know him as well. At this time, I need to plug a couple of things for Brad. Oktoberfest will be happening October the 3rd. If you'd like to help out with that, he would love to have your assistance, so let Brad know about that if you're willing to do that. Also, I should mention that the campout on the 19th, there is still room. If you didn't sign up or if you put a question mark behind your name, as many of you did, you need to see Brad because there is still room. You can still come. Families are invited, wife and children and the like. So thanks, Brad. The intramurals representative is Mr. Ryan Roop, a fourth-year man straight back there. You've gotten to know Ryan already if you've been at field day or if you've been out on the football field yesterday. Ryan's been working really hard to help turn around the intramural program from the last year, which suffered a little bit, I understand, due to some field education conflicts. That's been taken care of, I understand, and we look forward to a great year sports-wise with Ryan. And lastly, our publications representative, Mr. Rick Boschoven. He oversees the publications of the Concordia Student Journal and the Spectrum, which you call the premier campus magazine, according to Rick. So he's got a couple of editors lined up. Several of you, I know, wrote your names to even submit articles throughout the coming year. And he'll probably, well, I'm sure he'll be, the editor will be contacting you about that. So we look forward to that. And that's about all I have for you. This is who we are. I would like to just offer myself to you right now at this time as your representative, your voice on campus. If you have any concerns, please come and see me. I'm pretty accessible. If I'm not, please let me know, and I'll try to make myself more accessible. But I look forward to working with you all this year and seeing you around campus. So thank you.
Thank you, Jeremy. And now it's my pleasure to introduce the president of Concordia Seminary, Dr. John F. Johnson.
Thanks for the applause. Unlike Jeremy's case, it is necessary. Welcome to campus for this new academic year. Whether you are one of our new students or a returning student, it's really great to have you here. The purpose of my segment in these occasional president's forums throughout the year is to share with anyone who may be interested some of the developments and some of the initiatives related to the operations of the seminary, what's going on, as well as to respond to any questions or concerns that students may wish to raise in this kind of open forum. To be sure, the staging of these convocations does not mean that they are the sole avenue for you and I to converse with each other. I try and maintain an open door policy in my office, especially for students. And you're invited to talk with me at any time about any particular difficulty or any need that you have that you don't think is being met, or any suggestion or any concern about any dimension of the seminary. However, it has been my experience that, generally speaking, one student's question about what's happening at the seminary is a question also in the minds of others. And so this is a kind of public forum to provide you an opportunity if you want to ask those kinds of questions. It's certainly my intention to be throughout the year as open as possible about developments which may affect your study and life in our community. For my part this morning, there are five items to which I will draw your attention, along with some additional comments from two of our deans. First, an update on faculty and related personnel. Those of you who were present for our opening service witnessed the installation of six new faculty and professional staff members. To the best of my knowledge, that's the largest number of new faculty and staff installed at a single opening service in something like 25 years here at the seminary, and we're delighted to have them join us. Those of you who are not at the opening service or do not have any of the new faculty in class, I thought you might appreciate being introduced to them and hearing just a word about each of them. The four that we installed Sunday were, first of all, Dr. Dean Natasty, who was preacher in chapel this morning. Dr. Natasty is our new associate professor of practical theology, teaching specifically in the areas of homiletics and literature with electives in northern Minnesota culture. Dean is a graduate of Concordia Senior College in Fort Wayne, Indiana, received his MDiv degree from our seminary in 1973, received a Master of Arts degree in Political Science from the University of Missouri, and was honored by Concordia College in Seward, Nebraska, with an honorary Doctor of Letters degree in acknowledgement of his writing and speaking in the church. He comes to us with something like 21 years of parish experience, serving as pastor in Eugene, Oregon, and for 15 years as senior pastor at Crossview Lutheran Church in suburban Minneapolis. He has served the greater church through membership in a variety of committees and commissions and task forces, was the first vice president of the Minnesota South District when he joined our faculty. He's the author of four books dealing primarily with drama and Christian literature, and has been a writer for a number of adult Bible studies published by the Synod and by CPH. Also installed at our opening service is a new member of our exegetical department teaching in Old Testament, Reverend Timothy Seleska. Professor Seleska graduated from Concordia College in Ann Arbor. He did his MDiv here in 1982, received his Master of Philosophy degree from Hebrew Union College in Cincinnati, and he's currently finishing up the PhD program at Hebrew Union, writing his dissertation. From 1982 to 95, he was pastor at Peace Lutheran Church in Cincinnati, and since 1995, has been associate pastor of family life at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Napoleon, Ohio. Dr. Brian Salmonen joins us in the area of Department of Practical Theology, teaching specifically courses in counseling and also serving as the coordinator of our counseling service program here at the seminary. Also a graduate of Concordia Ann Arbor, graduated from here with his MDiv in 1986, has a Master of Education degree from the University of Toledo and a PhD degree in Marriage and Family Therapy from St. Louis University. He comes to us after 3 years, 4 years actually, on the faculty at Concordia College in Ann Arbor, where he was assistant professor of psychology and director of parish services. Prior to that time, he served for 7 years in congregations in Ohio and Illinois as parish pastor. The fourth new faculty member that you will become acquainted with this year is Dr. Bruce Schuckard, who comes to us after serving as pastor for 7 years at St. James Lutheran Church in Victor, Iowa. Dr. Schuckard received his BS degree from the University of Michigan, his MDiv and STM degrees from our sister seminary in Fort Wayne, and has his PhD degree from Union Theological Seminary in Richmond. Pastor Schuckard will be teaching areas in courses in New Testament in the Department of Exegetical Theology. He currently also serves as chairman of the Synod's Commission on Ministerial Growth and Support. So we were delighted to augment our faculty with these four new faculty members. In addition, we installed two new professional staff members that you will probably have occasion to see on campus. Ernest Burnett was installed as coordinator of public services for our library. Ernie is one of our MDiv graduates and also received his STM degree here, and has been for the past 4 years pastor of Zion Evangelical Lutheran Church in Seattle, Washington. David Faulkner, Reverend David Faulkner, was installed as admissions counselor. David is familiar to probably many of you because he actually has been away from the seminary only about a year. He graduated in 1996. He was president of the Student Association, so there is hope for you, Jeremy. David received his BA from the University of Central Oklahoma, an MA from the University of Central Oklahoma, and was the assistant pastor at Faith Lutheran Church in Columbus, Indiana, when he received the call to come back to the seminary to help us in our recruitment program. We now have a total of 34 full-time faculty members. We do anticipate additional faculty staffing next year, specifically in the areas of New Testament and systematic theology. Professor Brighton, Dr. Brighton, will be retiring at the end of next year. We'll be looking for someone to replace him in New Testament, and we continue to have some personnel needs in the Department of Systematic Theology. I've always made it a point of certainly indicating to students that you are very much invited to share the names of pastors that you may have become acquainted with and who you feel would make good prospective faculty members here. Keep in mind that we're looking for someone specifically in New Testament and systematics, and if you have any suggestions, don't hesitate to drop a name to Dean Preuss, Dean of Faculty, or to myself. I know that students see faculty from a different perspective than many, but I think that it is by common agreement out in the church, the fact that we have now brought to this campus the best faculty that this seminary has had in a generation. They bring to their tasks on your behalf a significant record of parish experience. The average number of full-time years in parish ministry of our faculty is 11. They bring to their task, all of them, advanced study and scholarly expertise in the fields in which they're teaching. 75% of our faculty have earned doctorates, and they bring certainly a commitment to the church's doctrinal position and a vision for some of the things that our church needs to do as we move into a new century of service for the sake of the gospel. It's an excellent, talented faculty, and I know that your appreciation of them will increase as your time with them goes on. We also have two guest professors with us who will be teaching full-time loads this year. Dr. James Bachman is on sabbatical leave from Valparaiso University, where he teaches in the area of bioethics and philosophy and religion. And during this year, we're honored to have Dr. Bachman spending his sabbatical leave with us, teaching in the area of systematic theology. We also are pleased to have his wife, Susan, in that serendipitous bargain. Dr. Bachman, Susan Bachman, has a PhD in speech communications, and she is teaching our pre-seminary speech course for those who still need such a course for us this year. Dr. Rudy Blanc is another guest professor on our faculty this year, teaching in our regular MDiv program and also with our Hispanic Institute for Theology. Rudy has longtime service as a missionary in Venezuela, and we're delighted that he is spending a year and maybe even hopefully a two-year furlough with us. And I also should express my thanks to the Board for Mission Services of the Synod for allowing Rudy to spend his time as a guest professor at Concordia Seminary. Just a couple of other personnel notes for your information. Dean Preuss, our Dean of Faculty, is on leave for fall quarter, completing a manuscript that he owes CPH. And in his stead as Dean of Faculty, Dr. Charles Arend, who is the Assistant Dean of Faculty, will be carrying out Dean Preuss's responsibilities. Also, this marks the first year of service of Glenn Thomas in a new position. The vast majority of you probably had occasion to get to know Glenn Thomas because of his role in our ministerial recruitment and admissions program. But Glenn has been appointed the new vice president for seminary relations at the seminary. The recruitment office is still under his supervision, but he has added to his responsibilities those of seminary relations that include publications, public publicity for the seminary, relating the mission of the seminary to our constituencies in the wider church. So that sort of updates you a bit on where we are in terms of faculty and staff. Second brief item has to do with enrollment, and again, a special welcome to our new MDiv, or alternate route students. We have 92 new students beginning their program of study toward certification and ordination. We will, as I understand it, anticipating having five more beginning their study in the fall quarter. Actually, the number of MDiv students on campus is larger than last year. We have 322 MDiv students on campus compared to 304 last year. At this point, having not received a final official report from our registrar's office, our registration total in terms of MDiv and certificate or alternate route students is totals 510, and we'll be receiving a final registration report that will also add in our graduate school enrollment as well. As always, we're thankful to the Lord that He touches the lives of men like you, and that you respond to use your gifts and abilities to prepare for his ministry in the church. Item three has to do with the renovation of Founders Hall, or isolation dorm, as it is known. As many of you know who've been on campus now for a couple of years, we spent a good deal of time and attention to trying to improve the living conditions of our married students. And we have completed, of course, our 79-apartment complex known as Concordia Woods over there for married students and families. And then I had indicated a couple of years ago to the single students that once that project was behind us, we want to take a look to see what we can do to upgrade the living quarters of our unmarried students on campus. And the first stage in that process was the renovation of isolation. Dean Smith served as chairman of a committee to study what needed to be done in that dorm, and he's probably the appropriate person to sort of bring you up to date on what, in fact, was accomplished over there. For those of you who are not familiar with isolation and where we are in terms of its final completion and moving, I think, one final floor of students in.
When we studied the dormitory situation, the first thing that the students told us was that they wanted to preserve the architectural integrity of the buildings, and that they did not want us, you know, to come into these buildings and simply gut them and build something very modern in the midst of a Gothic building. We honored that request, and so we began working with engineers on just what we could do. Now, what's been done in isolation is simply it will be air-conditioned and have central heat and air with individual units so that each student can control the temperature in their room. They'll have their own thermostat. No more radiators. We also upgraded the electrical system. Since you only had one electrical outlet, we thought maybe you could use a few more. So those have been added together with new lighting, overhead lighting, both in the rooms and in the halls. A sprinkler system was added as a fire control device. That has been added. Then we also are painting the entire dorm, carpeting the entire dorm, and we purchased new furniture for the dormitory. Now, we've now moved 23 men into the dorm. It will hold 46, so we're halfway there. By the end of this week, they will turn over the main floor to us, and we will move in another batch of about 15 men. And then the only thing left are the basement rooms, and they should be moved in by the next week. So things are moving along very well. I want to thank those of you who are living with roommates for now, because that dorm was not ready. We appreciate your patience in this, and very soon it will be over. I also want to say to you that as soon as we get the men settled in isolation dormitory, then we will begin the assignment of study rooms. We may be able to do that before October the 15th. If we can do so, we will. So we'll get on that as quickly as we can. Also, I should say that we are looking at the other dorms to see what can be done. I don't think we're ready to just simply say we're done with isolation and we're not going to do any more. We are going to be looking at the rest of the dorms for the future. So that's where we are today. And things have gone quite well with this project.
I was told that it cost $1.5 million to build the entire campus of Concordia Seminary. It is costing us $2 million to renovate the one dormitory building. And you should know of the kind of very generous support that has been given for this project from people out in the church. We received 4,000 individual gifts to this project, and as that indicates some significant interest and momentum among people out in the church to help our campus in terms of modernization. As Dean Smith indicated, we're now going to be looking at where to next in terms of dormitory improvement. We're going to be asking the same engineering company that did the study and project in isolation to look at G dorm over here to see if a similar kind of renovation could take place. Then we will be looking at the quad dorms. One of the problems with the quad dorms of doing the same kind of thing as far as central air and all of that is that they are built sort of oddly. The rooms are not exactly one on top of each other with the same kind of plumbing going through several floors and so forth. But there are certainly some things that we can do in terms of improving the quad dorms as well. And we'll be continuing to look at that that aspect. A fourth item just to share has to do with a campus computerization project and the establishment of a local area network that will be of immense technological advantage to everyone on campus, students and faculty and staff. Dr. Andrew Bartelt serves as Dean of Administration, and in that capacity, he has been the point person to develop a plan for our computerization project, and I'll ask Dr. Bartelt to update you on that.
Some of you who were here last fall know that really 2 years ago we started a study of what could be done for both our phone system and with it then the potential computer network as well. The phone system was implemented last year at the beginning of the school year. Some of you may recall it was replacing tin cans and string, which are available in the basement of Loeber Hall. But we got the new phone system up and running, and our goal now is to enter phase two of this, and during this year get a computer, a campus-wide network up and running. We did a lot of surveying with students at the time of the phone system and included some questions regarding computer needs, and realized that for most students, your biggest concern is internet connectivity and email. There's also the potentiality of being directly tied into a campus network that would link your rooms to the network, to the library, and even be able to communicate with the faculty, for example, online. I'm not sure exactly where all of those things are going to go in the near future. We have now contracted with a man who will begin his duties as information systems manager at the end of this month. And it will really fall to him now to design and implement a campus network. In the near term, I think I, without making promises that can't be fulfilled, would hope that we will be online at least for a cheaper form of internet and email connection than perhaps is presently available to you through your telephone line and a modem. I'd be curious, how many of you are on have email right now through your phone modem? Hey, it's a new world out there. I'm still trying to figure out how some of this stuff works, and in many ways the students are ahead of the rest of the place on this one. We hope to make that available to you through the you have two phone line jacks. You could have a second phone if you want, or you can simply use your phone line as a modem line. There's a third jack that's a Category 5 cable that would then tie in directly to a campus network, and if we can provide internet access through that sort of in bulk, we can probably provide this for you cheaper than paying your $20 a month or whatever. Okay. So that's kind of where we are on all of this, and on the one hand, you're able to do what you need to do now. I think we'll be able to provide a way for you to do it better. If you have specific questions or concerns, we may be doing some targeting and some surveying when Mr. Bowman comes on campus. He's finishing up his service at a college in Illinois where he served as some associate dean of information systems. So he brings some expertise in educational computing to our campus. We look very much forward to having him here. If you have concerns, please let me know. I'll be glad to receive a note saying, I think you ought to do this or what about that, as we seek to provide the kind of service that will really be a benefit to all of us. Thank you.
Then finally, before you might have any questions, there is a fifth item that I wanted to bring you up to date on and comment about, and it's not particularly a pleasant item, nor is it one that is absorbing a lot of our time and energy here. But it is an item that you perhaps hear about, or your parents hear about, or your home pastor hears about when you go on breaks and ask what's going on. And that relates to a publication called Christian News, edited by Pastor Herman Otten. The seminary has been mentioned rather prominently in that paper in recent issues. I know that none of you read it, except maybe at the checkout line at the supermarket or something. I did do think you should know something of what that dialogue is all about. Herman Otten graduated from this seminary in 1957, and at that time the faculty of the seminary refused to certify him on the basis of certain actions and attitudes that he took over against various issues of the faculty back there now 40 years ago. Pastor Otten appealed the faculty's decision to the Board of Regents of the seminary back in 1959, and they upheld the faculty's position that he was not to be certified for the ministry in the Synod. And since 1959, a whole series of events transpired with a decision of the Synodical Board of Appeals in 1960 that returned the case to the president of the Synod at that time. John Behnken, president of the Synod at the 1962 Cleveland Synodical Convention, considered the case of Herman Otten's certification to be closed. In 1965, a resolution at the Detroit Convention of the Synod was adopted, in which the Convention of the Synod in 1965 declared the Herman Otten case was closed. Well, with dramatic events happening in the Synod and at the seminary in the 1970s, from about 1974 until the present time, there has been continued discussion and requests from Pastor Otten and others that the seminary now, here in 1997, certify him for the ministry. Pastor Otten does not agree that the church actually closed his case, and does not agree that the decision not to certify him made years and years ago should still stand. All of this, to some extent, came to the surface at the 1995 Synodical Convention in response to various overtures about certifying Pastor Otten. The 95 Synodical Convention adopted a resolution, 7-18A, that called for the formation of a synodical committee appointed by the president of the Synod to study the materials and issues pertinent to the Herman Otten case and attempt to reach some kind of solution that would promote harmony on this matter in the Synod. That synodical committee, appointed by President Barry, issued a report dated December 1, 1996, in which it basically recognized that the Synod had declared the case closed, but also recognized that Pastor Otten has continued at various points to ask for certification by the faculty of Concordia Seminary St. Louis. And the Synodical Committee recommended to the President of the Synod that a committee of seminary faculty members meet again with Pastor Otten to discuss what our seminary has understood to be the primary barrier in considering Pastor Otten's certification, and that is his understanding of the Eighth Commandment and his application of the Eighth Commandment in his practice of journalism through Christian News. The faculty accepted the recommendations of the Synodical Committee from December 1, 1996, and four members of our faculty were appointed to discuss with Pastor Otten this past summer, not his certification, but whether we can resolve the barrier to considering his certification, namely his understanding of the Eighth Commandment and practice of journalistic ethics. The committee that met with Pastor Otten was chaired by Dr. Paul Schreiber. In addition to Dr. Schreiber, it included Professor Eichmann, Dr. Bartelt, and Professor Warnick, and they met with Pastor Otten on May 13, June 10, and June 27, as recommended by the Synodical Committee and President Barry. And their report has been forwarded to Dr. Barry in fulfillment of the recommendations that we have yet another discussion with Pastor Otten about these matters. The result of those meetings in terms of our faculty committee's report was simply to indicate that there remains some serious deficiencies in the opinion of our faculty committee in Pastor Otten's understanding of the scriptural and confessional meaning of the Eighth Commandment and in the application of the Eighth Commandment to his journalistic ethics, and that therefore this barrier that the faculty all the way back in 1981, after meeting with Pastor Otten, stated is still there, is exactly that, still there now in 1997, and as a result of that, there will be no discussion regarding his certification. Pastor Otten certainly has every right to disagree with the opinion of the faculty committee and the seminary on that matter, and he is certainly doing so in print. And if I may be frank about it, he is doing so with examples of exactly why there are problems with his understanding of the Eighth Commandment and its application to Christian journalism. I expect that the expression of disagreement with the seminary about his certification will continue to be in the pages of Christian News, but I thought you simply, as students of the seminary, deserve to know a little bit about the background to all of this. And as you know, if people ask you questions about what the seminary has against Pastor Otten or the seminary's treatment of Pastor Otten and all of that, ask them to write me a letter or give me a call, and we'll be happy to try and provide them with an accurate account of what's transpired. Those are the five items, then, that I wanted to bring you up to date on, and we do have time, I think, for just a couple of questions. Normally, we don't spend this much time with me talking, but with the beginning of school, there are a lot of things going on that we wanted you to know about, and if you have a question but don't have a chance to ask it now, catch me in the hall or something. But while we have a few minutes remaining, are there any questions about any of the items that I mentioned or about anything else as far as that goes concerning seminary? It appears that I've done another excellent job in in anticipating your every concern, curiosity, or comment. Any questions? If not, you're going to have another exciting year, I'm confident, on campus. God bless you and your study and your preparation for the ministry here.